Hello, everyone. Welcome to day five of the NLP Life Coaching Experience. And again, I'm pre-recording this because of the hurricane that's bearing down upon us. So we don't know how long this may be without power. So I'll probably have the next week up so people can do it. And of course, if everything's fine and the classes go live on Monday and Wednesday, you'll be able to see it again and you'll see it live. And of course, those that want to become life coaches, it's an interesting thing to watch the course being done back to back, because as you all know, you never quite do it the same way twice. So whatever I'm doing on the recording, pre-recording like I did for Monday and what I'm doing now, will be slightly different, of course, when I step in and do it live with the class. So, but today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. Yesterday, we talked about your story. What is your story and how it interacts? So today we're going to take that in a slightly different direction and have a little bit more fun with it. And what it'll be, it's about control. Today on day five, it's about control. Your needs control your life. And when you look at your story is driven by your needs. And one of my favorite quotes is, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. So in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And that's Viktor Frankl. And there's a guy that had a story. I mean, not just his whole family. I think his whole village was wiped off the face of the earth. He was the only guy of all those people that made it through the concentration camps in World War II. And he spent the rest of his life talking about love and forgiveness and things like that. So if you've never read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, it's a great book. But I always like, it's between stimulus and response is our opportunity for growth. And today is going to tie in these two concepts, needs and what we would call triggering and or anchoring. But I always say responsibility is your ability to respond. Right now, most of us are trained like animals. You know, this happens, we do this. This happens, we do that. There's nothing wrong with that. It frees up our minds and it frees things, but we need to take control. So what we're going to talk about, first of all, is what are your needs? We have six basic human needs. And I'm going to go over them quickly. It's certainty, uncertainty, significance, connection, growth, love and connect. There's all these things going on, right? And there's no right or wrong, but four of these are our basic needs. And then if we get the four basic needs, this is a little bit different than, obviously different than Maslow's. You know, the need about we're all searching for a self fulfilling and self-actualization, which sounds good in theory, but it may not work in the real world. So what you want to think about is the fact that, first of all, you know, we all need certainty in our lives. We all search for certainty. When we're certain about how things work and how others behave, we can predict what will happen in the future and feel safe. We all want a certain level of certainty. Interesting topic doing this now with the hurricane bearing upon us. And part of the biggest problem with the hurricane is there's so much uncertainty. We don't know where it's going to hit. We're not quite sure exactly when it's going to hit. And it freaks people out because people like certainty. And so we want to feel safe. We want to feel like we can trust. And that's what certainty is all about. We want to reduce our constant threat scanning for threats. Right? And so we search for that safety and security. But what happens if everything in your life was certainty? If you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, this is going to happen. Would you say it might get a little boring? Right? We always talk about long-term relationships and how, you know, after a relationship is really mature, you're very comfortable with the other person. You're certain about what they're going to do. You're pretty certain about how they're going to react. But one of the problems might be it gets a little boring. There's no uncertainty. When you're dating, there's a lot of uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen. You're not quite sure, right? And we like some uncertainty. We like certainty, but a little bit of it, too much of it, is boring. We want stimulation, novelty, add interest and fun things to our life. This is why true people do new things. They do stupid things, take risks, gamble, because it's said the variety is the spice of life. So we're going to talk about how we have to constantly balance certainty and uncertainty. It's just, and again, there's no right or wrong. One of these is more important to you than the other. If you want everything certain, and that's very comfortable with you, you probably have trouble being an entrepreneur, because there's a lot of trouble with being an entrepreneur, you know, a lot of uncertainty with being an entrepreneur. Same with if you really like uncertainty, a totally regimented job will drive you crazy. That's why you see people when we talk about balancing these, they might do some things. They might have a very certain job. They stay with it because it's going to have good retirement, health care, all this stuff, you know, good pay, and it's secure. And then they do crazy stuff on the weekends because that's where they get their uncertainty. Or back and forth. We go back and forth. So we have certainty and uncertainty. So we're always trying to remove or avoid stress. It's one of the things we do as human beings. Now, there's a lot of methods with it. We could have control, and that's for certainty. You might get learned helplessness. You know somebody that acts like they're helpless, then you find out they're not. People get passive aggressive. They get consistency. Rituals are about certainty. People like certain religious rituals because there's certainty in the ritual. Priest does this, then they do that. You know, as I say, this happens. You get in your shot and your cracker and you can go home. And I'm not making fun of it. There's that certainty and we like it. That's what faith is all about. So how do you get certainty? You know, what is it that drives you to get certainty? But then at the same time, we have the need for variety, thrill seeking, risk taking, learning, competitions like that. Some of us sabotage stuff because we blow shit up just because it's fun to put it back together. So we're constantly going back and forth. So how do you get uncertainty? And how do you balance these two? Or do you balance these two? Right? So you have certainty and uncertainty. And then once you have these first four levels are constantly going on. You're always balancing certainty and uncertainty, things like that. And again, good example for us here in Florida right now with the hurricane is there's some people. I was at a meeting last night. I still go to 12-step meetings, and a couple of people saying, well, you know, it's at least something's going to happen this weekend. We don't know what. And they're like, so they like that little bit of uncertainty. What's going to happen? You know, is it dangerous? Could be. And, you know, if safety and significant and certainty was the most important thing, you probably wouldn't still be in this part of Florida. You'd have been gone weeks ago or a week ago. So we're always balancing those two. Then comes your need to feel significant, right? Our need to feel significant. We need meaning in our lives. We want to have purpose, direction. We want to be important. You know, we may gain this in different ways, you know, from your profession. A lot of us on this stuff, that's one of the things, we get significance in our profession. A lot of us with our family. Many people find significance through their children because for several years, you're the most significant person in their life. They look to you for everything, food, shelter, all that. So some people find significance in writing or acting or sports, whatever it is, you want to feel significant. It's part of your identity. If you want to go to like a Maslow kind of thing, it's your identity. So how do you get significance? How do you get significance? There's nothing wrong with that. Running awards, writing books, that makes you feel significant. Right? It's what we do. We're constantly seeking it. And at the same time, we need connection with other people. Because without connection, we get lonely. We're social animals. We bond with others. Right? But same way that certainty balances uncertainty, our outer connection with other people has to balance our inner need for significance and self. You ever known someone what a dysfunctional relationship might be is they go, I lost my sense of self. I have no significance without my significant other. Right? Are you still independent? So we want to connect with people, but we want to feel significant. So these are, but we've all seen examples of someone that's chasing significance so much, they lose their family. I always think of the ones you always see, these politicians. You know, they spend 30 years in public life as politicians, congressmen, senators, and then they retire to be with their family. I always think that's interesting. And in a way, I'm making fun of it. Yes, I'm making fun of it. But I still remember when one person retired like that, And they were saying something, and they noticed his two children weren't there. And one of the reporters shockingly did their job, as I would say, found the son. And I said, what do you think of that? And he goes, I don't know. I haven't known my dad for 25 years. He's always in Washington. You know, he's never here. So I don't know what he talks about connecting with his family. I don't know who he is. And then he even said, I don't know if I want him. Ooh, that was it. But so he chased significance, being a congressman, being a whatever. You see it with people do other, whatever the career is. They'll chase it so much, they lose it. And they'll say, I'm doing it for my family. That's where you see the movies. I remember in the movie American Sniper, that's what he was saying. His significance was being, you know, the SEAL and the sniper. And he said, I'm doing it for you. And she, and to his wife and his kids, you know, about his wife and kids. And I remember she says to him, no, you're not. You don't even know who we are anymore. You know, you did all those multiple deployments back to back to back. So we can lose connection if we chase significance. But sometimes if you get too, if you only focus on the connection, you may not have any significance. And it's a balance. So how do you get connection? How do you connect with people? And these first four needs, significance, and connection, certainty and uncertainty, are like needs of the personality. You're constantly balancing needs, right, the connection. Then the next two basic of the six needs are more esoteric. They're more higher level, if you want to call them that. And that is the need for growth and the need for contribution. Because, you know, but once you fulfill those other needs, we usually want to grow. We want to study, want to develop ourselves. Our, you know, maybe it starts with our career, and then it starts with self-growth. Like, you know, people go to an ashram, people study meditation, whatever it is, they want to grow. And there's many different ways. Could be physical, bodybuilding, could be anything. We can't, it's a higher need. We can live without it. And some people don't seek a lot of growth. Just look around. You know, they're happy to go to work, come home, drink a couple beers, watch TV. That's it. There's no self-growth. And that's what always happens. People like on this call, I bet you most of us on this call have been through that experience where, unless you come from the kind of family that growth is inbred in you, a lot of your family looks at you funny. Why are you going to that seminar? You know, work's not sending you. I remember when I started taking seminars, they're like, well, is work sending you? No. Then why are you going? Because I want to learn. I remember my first NLP one, I had some friends that were like, well, that's stupid. If work ain't sending you, I wouldn't go. I said, but it's cool stuff. You know, they were happy, literally, to go to work, eat too much, smoke too much, do other things, and watch television. Yeah. But if you can get those significance and connection and you know, certainty and uncertainty, if you get those kind of balance, then you want to grow. Sometimes you just want to grow. Even if things in your life are uncertain, you want to grow. You want to experience new things. That's why you're on this call. You know, I talked about, I see a lot of wounded people, and that's why I want to do what I'm doing. I want to help people with that. And that's about growth. And so what do you do for growth? Well, obviously you're here, but what else do you do for growth? You know, how do you fulfill that need? And then with it, you have your contribution. You know, we want to contribute. Obviously, I'm on this call. This is what I do. One of the way I contribute is the world at large. I'm trying to be more than just belong to a group. I want to expand it. You know, I want to contribute to it. That's why, you know, again, when I see wounded healers, wounded people that can't accept help, wounded people that are stuck in that cycle of can't make money, can't lose weight, even though they have this wonderful skill set. What's going on? So what we want to do is how do you balance these things? How do you balance these things? So how do you contribute? And then what we want to focus on is, if you think about it, we always have these conflicts between certainty and variety. You know, if things get too certain, you get bored. You want to go do something to have fun. You want to do something out of the ordinary. But if nothing in your life is certain, maybe you can't handle that. When everything falls apart, you're just looking for certainty. And again, I always talk about my addiction world, because you see people when they're first sobering up, all they want is certainty. I just want to be normal, they'll say. you know, get a job, go to work, come home, make, because in the throes of addiction, there's a lot of uncertainty. Where am I sleeping? Where am I living? I mean, homelessness is part of it. Could be other things. You blow up jobs, careers, relationships. So, and then you search for that certainty. Yeah, I want to be certain. I want to be comfortable. Well, once you get it, it's not unusual to see people 6 months, a year, year and a half later go, this is boring. You know, I'm not drinking, but it's boring. I go to meetings or I'm in therapy. I work. I come home. Yeah. You know, there's no variety. There's no excitement. That's why good programs that teach that teach you how to have fun without drinking. That's a different topic, but still, it's about balancing these two needs, you know, the certainty and the uncertainty. How do I have fun? How do I do this? How do I do that? And then, of course, with significant, how do you, there may be a conflict there, right? So you need to look at these things. And then you need to look at your significance and your connection. Is one out of balance? A lot of this, to me, is about that horrible word balance. You know, you want to seek connection, but you want to be at home. You want a connection with your family, with your peers, with whoever it is, right? Because if you go too much in one way, you lose the other. If you go too much in one way, you lose that. And then, of course, what about your growth and your contribution? You know, you want to look for conflicts in this, and you want to look at maybe one of these is out of whack. And once it gets out of whack, then you got to figure out a way to fix it, right? And put it back in balance. And then, so now when you look back at your story, before I go on, Monday we talked about your story and, you know, what drives your story. And now if you go back and you look at your story, you'll see, and again, you had your values and your beliefs, but your values and beliefs are driven by these needs. You know, the need for certainty will develop a belief and you'll do certain things to do it. You know, if that's your belief, if certainty is the number one thing, that's your belief, you'll sacrifice other things to get there. Or again, it's significant. I have to get to the top of my field. And that may leave, you know, three marriages, a bunch of kids that I don't know, all this, but that's your belief. So these needs actually form your, are at the bedrock of your beliefs and your values, right? And again, yeah, you just have to figure this out. You have to begin to develop it. What drives you? You know, one of my friends says people that chase significance. But again, how do you get the significance? Real quick, when you look at this, you know, how do you get certainty? What's your evidence for certainty? What's your variety? What's your evidence for variety? What's your evidence for significance? There are people that only feel significant when they're making a lot of money. You know, other people only feel significant when they're getting awards or getting accolades. One of my friends says, you know, it's $3 or three cheers. Which one really drives you? Right? And again, if you're driven by the money, you don't understand people that go, why are you doing that? There's no money in it. I hear this a lot around our field. There's people that make really good money and they ask me, why do you do this? Well, there's no money in it. Yeah, well, I like it. It makes me feel significant, to be honest with you. It's a way I connect. It could be anything. You know, I was talking about my theater. You know, when I'm in a play, especially community play, so it's not equity, so I'm not getting paid. You know, I get paid a lot for community theater. You know, why am I doing it? Is it significance? I don't know. Maybe I do. I like it, right? But there's variety because nothing about a live show, as people do stage shows can tell you, when the curtain goes up, you don't know what's going to happen. Are the people going to hit their marks? Are they going to say their cues in the right way? It's a blast, and I like it because of the connection I make with like-minded people. All of us on this call, there's a connection because we're here. I see it when I'm teaching in class. There's a connection because we're like-minded, right? And that's how you get it. And of course, all the people in a show, there's that connection, right? And it could be significance. And you try to make it as certain as you can, knowing there's variety. To me, it's a nice balance, and it's also a growth prospect. Acting is a field that you've never done doing, just like that. Maybe you could say you contribute, you give back to the community, but I know in my case, I could just say, I was talking to somebody, we were talking about shows, and I was in a play, and they go, oh, what'd your wife think of it? I go, I don't know, she didn't see that show. And they go, she didn't. And they go, why not? I go, I knew she wouldn't have liked it. You know, I've been with my wife 30 years, and I know the kind of thing she likes. I know the kind of thing she doesn't like. I wasn't doing it for her to give me accolades. You know, that part I'm not going after the significance. I'm doing it because I want to do the part. It was challenging. It was this. It was that. Whatever it was. And then other plays, she'll come. She really enjoys. But again, these needs will show you why you do what you do and how you chase it. You know, again, people do the significance by being the sharpest dressed or dressing outrageously. And somebody with tats from, you know, I'm at the health club now and I see these people that I can't tell if they have a shirt on or off, which, again, part of this is my age. I don't know. I was in the military. A lot of guys got tatted. I never did. But I don't understand it, but that's my own thing. But maybe that's how they feel significance with all the tats that they have, you know, or bodybuilders. They get into it for the significance, to be different, to stand out, you know, and maybe it's the way they grow. I mean, this begins to explain an awful lot, right? And this is under your control. That's what we talk about, control. Once you become aware of it, you're like, And again, how can you change it? Well, this is what we're working on. What about your questions? How can I easily let go of my need to feel significant? And find significance in making more money. Right? How can I easily let go of my need to feel significant by helping everyone and easily adapt that I help the people that want the help that can afford the help? I know that this is for a couple of people on the call specifically. But I mean, that's a way to get significance. When you look at why do you do things, it's like that, right? Or it's the way I contribute, is I give back. Okay, whatever it is, it is. So we want to begin to do that. Now, what goes with this? Again, look at your story, and you begin to see how all this, there's a method here. I've been doing this for like 10 years with hypnotists, NLPers, a lot of alcohol and drug counselors and psychologists, and a few lawyers that are usually trained in our field. Again, I'm using I'm the NLPer to the NLPs, hypnotist to the hypnotist. So I see these patterns, and I have it too. You know, I'll admit, you know, for years I wanted awards, but then what would happen with me is I'd get an award and I go, you know, I remember I got a big award and I lost the damn thing. You know, I wanted it, then I got it. I'm like, it's like the old Woody Allen. I wouldn't join a group that would allow a guy like me to be a member. That goes back to my self-worth, which is something that we're constantly working on, right? So again, and you can change how you feel the significance. Is it an award on the wall, you know? Or is it dollars in the bank account? Maybe it's a balance of those. I don't know. But if what you're doing isn't working, maybe you need to change that. So my dog's barking in the back, sorry. So what I want you to do is balance these and look at these. Now I want to talk about triggers. You know, in NLP, triggers anchoring, right? Neuro-linguistic programming. I like to say no limit people. This is not neuro-linguistic coaching. This is no limit people coaching, right? You're going to become a no limit person because once you understand how your mind works, you've got the keys to the kingdom, ladies and gentlemen. You know, you're about almost halfway through this, and this is much different than what we teach in an NLP or a hypnosis course. And it's not just applied, it's looking at it strategically and tactically in a new way. So it's neuro-linguistic programming, but it releases no-limit people. And again, we all know what triggers are, anchors. It's stimulus response, it's Pavlov, you know, ring the bell, show the food, the dog salivates, rings, you know, salivates. And it lasts through time. I think it was 72 times they could ring a bell with no food after it was trained, the dog would still salivate. We are nothing more than trained dogs, but what if our triggers are all about, you know, an anchoring, to use our anchoring thing, and it has to do with, they've tested this, you know, when you're entering into a state, as we know, it will peak. If you start getting angry, it starts getting angry, you're probably at the peak, and then it's going to subside, right? Or any feeling of love, lust, humor, whatever, it's going to peak, right? But if there's a unique stimulus or anchor applied as you're hitting the top, then that will elicit that response later on. That's Pavlov's bell, and that's that. We know that. Lasts through time. But you know, we have all these common ones. You know, the smell of fresh bread, a certain tone of voice, William Danny Horton. You know, some of us, it's applause, right? Traffic lights, obviously, that's an anchored in response. You don't have to think about it. That light turns yellow, you start to slow down, or some of you hit the gas. Certain things, they will just set off a response in us, right? But what if we think about it a little bit differently? What if we think about how these triggers set off your needs? So if you come in and your significant other gives you a funny look, right, then you feel rejected, disrespected, unloved, right? And that, so it's going back to that need for connection. But the trigger that fires up that need, right, it is what sets it off. And what if, again, as we talked earlier, what if that funny look from your spouse is just the fact they got a headache, they had a bad day at work, you know, they're thinking about something else, it's not you, but you read into it, right? So what we want to do is learn your triggers that starts the negative cycle. In other words, what part of your human needs will you let control you, and what will trigger it, you know? So if an organization you feel is disrespecting you, will you blow up the whole thing? And are they really disrespecting you, or are they just doing what they do? They may be just doing what they're doing. It's not that they're trying to disrespect you. It's just, again, it's just what it is. And again, we can reset these things. We can reset these things. So when you look at your needs, especially if you have certain things that are a little bit out of whack, you know, oh my God, I came home and the house was messy, so I don't feel certain. The house is messy. You know, you got kids, you got dogs, whatever it is, it's no big deal. To me, to you, it might be. Well, you can begin to change it. So what triggers start negative cycles? And then that triggers back into which one of your human needs are being activated, maybe in a negative way. And what if you use it in a good way? You know, and again, are you aware of it? Because we can reset these as often as we need or want. So now if you look at your old story, when you look at your old story, you had old needs, values, and anchors. We talk about beliefs and then values and that, and now we have the anchors. And then the human needs balance into all of these. Because now when you begin to change it, this is why I think a lot of times when you do an NLP technique or a hypnosis intervention, and it works somewhat, unless you get sometimes... It's these other drivers, the values, the beliefs, and the human needs, you know, that you'll change certain things. But if these remain the same, eventually they're going to manifest in a new way. It's the only way, or they'll come back, right? And again, we don't want to just treat the symptom. We want to treat the cause. You know, if again, since addiction is one of my big things, if they're drinking or drugging, that's the symptom. It's not the cause. You remove it, you get the alcohol, the drugs, gambling, sex, pornography, whatever the addiction, out of the way. Well, what's the cause of it? Is it the need to be significant, the feeling of a connection? All these things. And now you can look at everything a little differently, even something like addiction. You know, many people in an addiction world, their connection is with the dope dealer, with the bar guys, with the drinking buddies, whatever it is. And if they quit, they lose that connection. They have no connection. And again, this is why I clash with people who go, I don't like my clients to go to 12-step programs or switching addictions. Well, especially if they were a bar drinker, well, you just ripped out 3/4 of their social life. And now what? What are they going to do? You know? So, and the 12-step program seems to fit that. Or it could be church. Could be a lot of things will fit that. So what I want you to do is it begins to look at that, right? Maybe it's the feeling of significance in an addiction. I can drink everybody under the table. I'm significant because I know where all the late parties are. I know where to get, when I was growing up, you couldn't get booze on Sunday in Indiana. But I knew where you could always get liquor from the time I was about 17 on, right? So that made me feel significant, you know? It was different. All this stuff that we do. So it begins, now you begin to see things in different aspects. It's just like, when you see the connection too, maybe the connection is with the addiction. And same with certainty and uncertainty. I'm pretty certain I'm going to feel when I drink a couple drinks or take a pill or do that. It's going to deaden me. It's going to excite me. Whatever it is, you're certain of that. And maybe you have fun in the uncertainty of it because God knows what will happen when this starts. Am I going to drink one day? Am I going to drink 2 days? Am I going to blow everything up or not, right? So now it makes you look at everything differently. And this is what we want to do. And again, what we've been doing now, our daily ritual was about resetting some of those anchors, opening your options. Because rituals create power, right? Rituals create power. And again, if you have a ritual of fitness, you can look at somebody and say, that's one of their rituals. They work out. Right. Some it's easy if they're real muscular, you can tell they lift weights or whatever it is. The rituals create power, right? Your rituals really drive you, right? And if you redesign your needs or just reorder them and say what's more important to you or this, that's why you see people go through those major life change suddenly. And when I made fun of politicians, but sometimes people go, I've been chasing the wrong thing. I've been chasing this significance when I really want connection. And my connection was here all the time, but I didn't take it. So if you reorder them, you make this more important than that. You know, it's your life, it's your goals, it's your needs, right? And then you got to realize, what are the anchors to those things? And again, what if you change what represents it to you? What represents a significance? What represents a connection? What represents feeling certain or uncertain? You know, what represents growth and contribution? And it's all about taking charge, right? Once you begin to break this down, then it ties back into your story. And I'm going to keep coming back to your story because that's what drove you. And now you look at it differently. You go, what was driving me? Most people don't ever examine themselves this much. Most people never dig underneath the surface. They might remove a few symptoms. Maybe they quit smoking. Maybe they quit drinking. Maybe they whatever. But they don't look at the underlying drivers. And they don't design a life. They're always in react mode. We're in act mode. We're going to design what we want. And first you have to understand what drives you. You know, what are your needs? What are your values? What are your vices? What are your virtues? Once you begin to figure those things out, boom, then it really shifts. You're doing right. So today we're going to do a real quick one. I want you to take a deep breath and close your eyes. And all I want you to do is focus on your rituals. What are your rituals? That's why I want you to get in the habit of doing these things first thing in the morning, especially if you take a moment and especially write it down. Not just think it, but write it down. What are a couple of things you're grateful for? What are some of your goals for the day? Then you write some questions. How am I going to get these things? How am I going to do this? How can I get more done in less time and have more enjoyment today? If you ask those kind of questions, this is all about resetting your brain, your reticular activating system. And now, what if you ask a question like, how can I let go of my need to feel significance if that was the problem? Or how can I balance my significance and my connections easily today? How can I easily find that perfect spot between variety and certainty? You begin to ask questions, your brain will help you, right? And once you do this, right, then you can begin to think about the things that we're really doing. And it's all about the rituals, right? Rituals make us feel good. Yeah, I was working with an athlete. And he had a certain ritual he always did before he got in the batter's box. And whatever it was, tap to the left, tap to the right, tap the left foot, tap the right foot, and then wiggle three times and settle into into his batting stance. And that was his ritual, right? And it becomes second nature. We all have rituals. How do you drive a car? How do you drive a car? You know, what do you do? Here's an interesting one. As you're relaxing, think about this. When you open the door to get out of the car, when you're driving the car in America and in the American system where, you know, driver's on the left, you take your left hand, you open the door and you step out. It's what we do. It becomes a ritual and you don't think about it. Well, couple of decades ago, there was a country that was experiencing a problem. The problem was they had a lot of people on bicycles getting hit by people opening their car door, or somebody opened the car door and the bicycle would run into the car door because they used a lot of bicycles. It was Denmark, I think, or the Netherlands. And so, you know, they would tell people, be careful. They talk about putting warning stickers on the mirror. Nothing seemed to work. But what happened, somebody came up with the idea that they made it part of the driving test, that when you're taking your driving test, when you put your car in park, before you got out of the car, you took your right hand, and you reached over to open the door this way. Instead of just unbuckling your seatbelt, opening this way, you crossed your right hand over. What does that do? Well, that causes your head to turn, so you're looking in the rearview mirror. You can't help but see the rearview mirror. And then, of course, right there, and also out of the peripheral vision, you're going to see maybe there's a bicyclist right there. And it cut down the incidence of people getting hit by the car door or a car door popping open and they hitting it, you know, exponentially. And it was about creating a new ritual. And now, once it became part of the ritual, it's what you do. It's like if you ever drive a stick shift and you get used to driving a stick shift, then you get into driving automatic. At least once or twice, you're going to hit the brake looking for the clutch, right? Or vice versa. And so what you want to do is think about creating the rituals that are going to empower you. And what if it is as simple as that 3 to 5 minutes in the morning that'll change everything in your life? Now, think about things you're grateful for. Writing down, what do you really want to accomplish today? And then some questions to ask to drive it. And maybe we'll get into some statements you can make. But these things become your drivers. And then you can really take charge of those other aspects of your life, your human needs, your human values, your human beliefs, your anchors, what gets you to do this and what gets you to do that. Today is a day of reflection. So tonight, as you drift and dream and float, I want you to think about your rituals and think about what rituals you already have. I don't know, in my case, as you're relaxing, I never drank coffee until I quit drinking alcohol. And so coffee drinking became a ritual to me. I had to develop it. I didn't really like it at first. You know, it was heavy cream, heavy sugar, and it became a ritual for me. And I realized how important it was when I decided to do something different. And part of the agreement to do this training I went through, Alpha Brain Training, is they ask you not to drink coffee for a week or a couple weeks before the training and while you're in the training, which was a 7-day training. And I agreed, and it was not easy. And I was home about 3 or 4 weeks, and I wasn't drinking coffee. And I liked the training, and I liked what I got out of it. But there was something missing, and it was the ritual of having my coffee in the morning. Because as I have my coffee in the morning and I write my little journal, and I usually write 3 or 4 things down that we're talking about, gratitude, goals, questions, and statements. And I was finding it hard to do one without the other because that became the ritual. And so I added back my old ritual. And it works for me. So take charge. So tonight, as you drift and dream and float, you'll program yourself for success, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual success, and reflect on what you're doing. And now I'm going to count from 1 to 5, bring you back, but you come back feeling fabulous. You come back feeling wonderful. 1, coming on up. 2, drifting to the surface. 3, wide awake, clear-headed, and refreshed. 4, opening your eyes, and 5, open your eyes, come on back. Good, welcome back. So today was about your human needs and the triggers or anchors that will set up those needs, which goes back to really your values and your beliefs. A lot of them are about supporting those what your needs are, right? Which one is it, significance or connection? Is it certainty or uncertainty? Is it growth or contribution? Now it begins, this mosaic of your life begins to make more sense. And it's all about having more fun and taking charge. So until next time, and again, hopefully this today was live. If not, you're watching a recording, and we'll see you on Friday as we do focusing and removing blocks. Have a great day.